This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remembering unusual times that can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows taught me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Are you ready to slay another day? So are we. Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows taught me. I'm Jess Sterling, here with my co-host, Sarah Humphrey. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, I am ready to do a little bit of black magic today.
Bringing people back from the dead again.
Again, I love witch shit. That's the thing. Like, I think that if Buffy was primarily just a witch show, then I'd be like, my favorite show ever. I love witch shit. I love it. I just, like, don't know if if I'm, like, a vampire girl. Have you ever thought about, like, what your favorite supernatural or I guess it's called supernatural, or like what else? Fantasy creature, is that the same thing, maybe different? I don't know,
it feels slightly different for some reason to me, but maybe they're probably both in the same kind of genre. No, I've never really sat down and thought about, like, my favorite. But I definitely think magic would be, and maybe that's too broad of a term, but like, I do think magic would be in there. And I mean, I like a witchy moment. Maybe, you know what, the vampires are a very specific thing. And I know there are people who, like, adore all vampire based stuff. I recently started watching The Vampire Diaries. Never seen it before. Wanted a new trashy TV show to put on in the background while I'm working, while I'm playing Stardew Valley, like, whatever, something to have on. And Vampire Diaries fit the bill. It is both, like, very no shade, like, it's a CW show. I rocked many a CW show back in the day. I've heard it's very outlandish, and through 15, 16 episodes can confirm. Very outlandish. But the thing about vampires is, I think there's, like, always an element of, like, there's a bit of squeamishness because of there's blood involved. But also, Vampire Diaries has so much wet squelching. Like, so much wet squelching.
What?
Like, the noises. Like, the wet squelching noises.
What?
Wait, like,
I mean, I would call it slurping. Is this a, like, vampire term that I was unaware of?
No, I think it comes from in Stranger Things. There's a season of Stranger Things.
Which where, one? Like, I did just rewatch all the Stranger Things.
Okay, and I think I never
watched. Season two. I never watched season four. So I rewatched one, two, and three. and to prepare for season 5. And then I watched season 4 for the first time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so season 2 is actually my least favorite season.
Well, yeah, I think it's most people's. Oh. I think it's...
So this is the other thing. I'm sorry for interrupting, but okay. I'm like kind of excited to talk about this. Because I've been very like out of the loop with like the general public's opinion, I keep like saying opinions that I think are cool and original. And Adam is like, that's
everyone says that.
I was like, I was like sitting there and I was like, one day on like probably during season 3, and I was like, you know, low key, I think Steve might be like the best character. And Adam was like, Sarah, that's like literally what everybody says.
Hey, it's still impressive that you are having these thoughts with like no input from anyone else. Like you're coming to that conclusion naturally, you know, which I think is fun. That is the general.
I didn't know that. And I was like, you know, hot take. And he's like, that is the coldest take.
Not a hot take.
Yeah. I didn't know. Like, I literally thought that, I don't know. I guess like the one thing that he was like, Sarah, you might be alone on the boat about, but also it's Adam, and Adam says very outlandish things that sometimes
it's like part of his brand. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody is on board with. I literally think that season 4 is my favorite season.
Okay.
Because, and I'll tell you why, my favorite Harry Potter book is Half-Blood Prince. And right. I feel like it's the same vibes. Like, let's find out like the backstory of like the villain. You know what I mean?
Yes. So, yeah. I think that I think is a hotter take. I don't know for sure. I don't think most people's favorite season is season 4. I think if you were to ask the general population, season 1 is because it's the original, because it's the start. I think people really, really adore it. Most people don't really care for season 2 that much. Season 3, I think, is my personal favorite, but also it's because it's very summer camp, like have fun vibes. Like
I call it silly bits. It's silly bits.
Yeah. It's way more silly than the other seasons, but it's my personal favorite. And then 4, I know, is my husband's favorite. He loves season 4. And I there are things I like about season 4, but I think season 4 for me, what holds it back is the Russia storyline. I like don't really care about.
That's what Adam said too. And I was like, yeah, but like I feel like everything else is so good that
everything else is so good. That's the thing.
I'm not bothered by it. I feel like that's my general take about most things. Like if I like 80% of something and I I was indifferent towards the Russia stuff. I didn't hate it, but I was like, I like everything else so much that I'm not really like bothered by the Russia stuff.
Yeah.
It was fine.
I also wonder too, because like you watched it in a binge, I assume, versus like season 4 dropped in multiple batches for like people who watched it in real time. Yeah. So I wonder if that also felt like you didn't care as much about the Russia stuff because we were like, we have such a limited amount of Stranger Things and now we're wasting all this time. Like felt like it took forever for spoilers for Stranger Things. Like, obviously we kind of been already talking about it, but like for Joyce and Hopper to like reunite, it just took like, it took the whole season. Like it took forever.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like there was Russia stuff in season 3. Like it was like a lot of Russia stuff, but it doesn't matter. So season 2 had squelching
That's where I think this all began, is because the in the subtitles, like the closed captioning, whenever the body horror stuff would be happening, it would just be on the screen like wet squelching noises or something like that. And so it's like incept in my brain that like, yeah, vampires contain a lot of wet squelching, specifically in the Vampire Diaries. Like, I don't think Buffy is as bad. I feel like there's actually a lot less blood sucking in, when I'm comparing the two shows, a lot less blood sucking occurring on Buffy versus Vampire Diaries. So
yeah, well, I guess it is the fact that like our main character is a vampire slayer in Buffy the Vampire Slayer versus our main characters. I mean, I've never seen Vampire Diaries. I know Elena Stefan and Dimitri. Damon.
Close.
Yeah,
Damon.
Oh, it's Stefan. Okay.
Stefan. Yeah.
So I know two of those are vampires, I think.
Correct. The men that you
At the very least.
At the beginning. Yeah. Who knows? I'm only three quarters of a way through first season. So there's eight of them.
And I know that there's like a lot of there's a lot, it's mostly vampires versus like mostly.
It feels, I have said this statement that it feels like every episode is surprise, new vampire, like, yeah. Oops, well, secretly a vampire. Like, this is everyone's vampire, a vampire
diaries. It's not like the Mortal Diaries.
This is so true, but also like they've killed off, like the body count on this show is absolutely insane.
Who's killing the vampires? Is it Elena?
No. Usually it's like vampire on vampire violence, honestly. Is usually, and they don't die like they do in Buffy. Like,
how do they die?
It is very like dust gone, no cleanup, no worries. We're moving on with our day. No. In Vampire Diaries, when you stake someone, they like, they just like fall back and their body is left. Like, it's a whole thing. And then it looks like their veins are like way more prominent and they're like almost like a grayish black. And their eyes look all funky, and that's it. Then you have to clean up after the death. Like, you have to clean it up.
That's really unfortunate.
It is. So yeah, the cleanup is definitely an issue. I think they're constantly having, because again, the body count is so much higher on this on Vampire Diaries than Buffy, and so like they're constantly having to clean up dead bodies. And
so is it Stefan and Dominic's job to clean up everything?
Stefan and Damon. Like, yeah, kind of. Like, kind of.
Are they friends or do they beef?
They're brothers, but they're brothers who kind of hate each other.
Oh, just like basketball twins.
Just like basketball. Yeah, but yes. Yeah. Just
all
like
hot twins. Brothers hate each other.
This is true. This is very true.
You have to have at least one ugly brother
to balance it out
so that they don't hate each other, or else the alpha male shit just like
too
comes
much testosterone.
Out and pull. Yeah. Yeah. Only Uggos. Two, I don't know the beef between two Uggo brothers, but yeah.
I don't know. Write in if you're an Uggo brother and you have an Uggo brother.
Stop it. No one's gonna do that.
No one's gonna do that. All right, let's talk about Buffy. Season 5, episode 17, Forever. I don't remember what I said, but we are not skipping the funeral. We kind of are, but we're like, we're not skipping the planning of the funeral. I suppose.
There was not a yada yada in sight, honestly.
Kind of wish there was. Not that I enjoyed this episode, don't get me wrong, but like, good God, we're really sitting in it. We're really stewing in the sadness.
I guess I understand because it's a momentous thing in their lives, but they did go to like the Ashley Furniture equivalent of the funeral home to pick out the casket. And I don't understand why the very bare minimum of how you can get Dawn involved in the planning when she feels like she has zero control. The bare minimum is like, Dawn, what casket do you think Mom will like? That's the least Buffy can do to make her feel involved or have some sort of input. I don't know why, and I guess maybe it's like a control freak thing. Like, she feels like she's the, like, we know that she feels like she's the only one that can take care of all of this. But if she had half a brain, she would be like, Dawn. Like, she would involve Dawn in something so arbitrary. Yeah. Like, what fucking casket she'll pick out.
I think part of it is, I think there's multiple things that's going through Buffy's head. I think number one, she's like deep in her own grief. So I think that like, she's not really then having the mental energy to be like, this is what I should be doing. This is what I shouldn't be doing. On top of that, I think she's trying to just get it done. I don't think she herself wants to linger in the like picking of the casket. I don't think she wants to linger there either.
Another reason to off put that task onto Dawn. Yeah,
but I think she also wants, I think in her mind, she's protecting Dawn from all of this by being like, this isn't a decision you have to make. I'll handle all of the arrangements so that none of this hits you, which again, like you said, could be a control thing. Could be, as she talks later in the episode about like her dealing with all of the planning has kept her mind off of the finality of her mother's death. And I think that's part of it as well. But like, it definitely is really sad watching them like pick out caskets and like the fact that it's Dawn, Buffy and Giles there. And I personally do not feel like the funeral director dude handled this well at all. That was awful.
The line that he said was like, oh, like that is a respectable thing of
it shows your fondness for the deceased or something like that, which like, you know, it's her mom. Like, at least say your mother, like not the deceased. Like, what are you doing?
It was just like, but also it was like weirdly formal. I think that that's again like, who in the world picks to become like a funeral director. Only creepers.
I mean, if you're giving the benefit of the doubt, I'd say people who are trying to help people in what might be the most difficult moment of their life, if they're good, right? If they're good. However, in my experience, what little experience I have with this sort of thing, I did not appreciate the like funeral person, the funeral home manager. I don't know what their title was, but like it very much felt like a money grab. Like, you should upgrade to this, this, and that.
No, but it always is. It really is as well. Because like, I remember when my mom and I went to the funeral home when my grandfather died and we were cremating him. And like the catalog that he showed us of like whatever bullshit vessel that we want to put him in, like it was it's like bare minimum to cremate is already like more than $1,000. And then whatever bullshit like container, vessel, like urn that you pick, it goes up so exponentially. It's just like it is a money grab. And I guess like that's part of like the business. Like everything is at the end of the day a business. But I just feel like, you know, people like funeral directors, the people that turn like dead animals into stuffed animals, and dentists and people that work for plastic, like they're like the most evil people that could ever be.
Yeah, because it's like you want to say they're in it to help people, like walk people through their grief, but that's just never been my experience with any of those people. It's always felt like either you do this thing that's insanely expensive, or like you don't love your deceased person enough.
Or like what kind of sicko is like, I want to drill into somebody's head and I'd like to see blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
it's weird.
What kind of evil? That's why in Toothless, the movie with Kirstie Alley, which I'm dying for you to see one day because I still think it's like my favorite like weird 90s movie. Like Kirstie Alley was a dentist and then she died and then she became like the Tooth Fairy. But then it was like, she was like, am I going to go to heaven? And they were like, no, you're a dentist. Your job was to torture people. Like, why would you automatically go to heaven? Yeah. I always like think about that. But yeah, that was a very off-putting scene. Like all these scenes are very off-putting scenes.
Yeah. And we find out, because all the Scoobies are kind of over at Buffy's house, they're still planning things. We find out that Joyce didn't want a wake. And I was really happy about this. Not happy, but I was really satisfied that we got this tiny detail of Buffy and Joyce had this conversation prior to her surgery of like, this is what I would want if the worst is to happen. And I appreciated that we got that because we must have mentioned this some point. It just felt like it wouldn't feel right and like logical for them to have not had that conversation prior to going into like a major surgery. And Dawn is again kind of out of the loop on this. She didn't know that Buffy and which again, she's the kid sister, like Joyce probably didn't want to upset her, Buffy didn't want to upset her, blah blah blah. But like the other detail that's dropped in here, Sarah, is that no one has been able to get in contact with Buffy and Dawn's dad. He is unreachable.
Yeah, once again, last time you heard from them, he was in Europe with the secretary, I believe the line was, so he is unavailable. I guess I'm like not surprised, but is nobody wondering if he got murdered?
I mean, it's a possibility. I just feel like I can't, it's so hard to like put myself in any sort of a position like this. Like I can't imagine having children and then not like them not having your phone number to get in contact with, like, because like seriously, like what if something does happen to the other parent that is solo parenting these kids? Like it's so messed up because again, even if they weren't together, you'd think he would be there to help in some sort, but it's like he's such a shithead, he's such an absentee parent that he can't even be available when like a traumatic life-altering event happens to his kids, you know?
Yeah, I feel, because like the time we've met Buffy's dad a few times, and you know, like he was like, oh, she's like troubled, like, you know, she's like a lot to handle. Buffy is, we never really saw him talk about Dawn because Dawn's fake. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really like get the idea totally that he, because she like went to, like summer, she summered with him. So like, I don't really think that, I think something's wrong. Like, I think that
you think it's a red flag that they've not been able to get
like I think,
in touch with
him. I think like it was a throwaway line that you're meant to forget about, but then you later on for like realize that like something's not right.
He's in LA, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be some sort of angel mm-hmm. crossover thing.
Yeah, I thought the same. So
yeah,
I mean, I think like somebody put a pin in. I think that once again, this show, I'm repeatedly reminded that there is no throwaway line that does not mean
something. Very intentional.
Yeah. It's very intentional. So I don't think like, oh, like Buffy's dad is like missing in action. Like that to me, that feels very like we are meant to pay attention to that. Not mm-hmm. so much like the show wrote off a character that's like disappeared to Europe because we don't want to hire an actor for it. I think that if the show wanted Buffy's dad around, or like if Buffy's dad was alive, the show is intentional enough that we would see some proof of life. So I like, once again, like put a pin in it. Like, I think that Buffy needs to be she needs to be an orphan for this whole thing to work. Like, she needs to be isolated and alone. So I think she will be isolated and alone. Very sad. But it seems off. And I think that like, it's something to be, if I was Buffy, something to be concerned about. But once again, there's like literally so much. She's in that scene, she's literally thinking about like how to write the most appropriate thing about how there's like not going to be the, as per the family's request, there will not be a wake, blah, 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 blah. And then I know that, so she has a lot on her plate, like normal.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
And then like the next day is the funeral. So
Right. They're at the funeral. We get to hear like the words that are said. We get a lot of like soft of like transitioning between the different characters. Mm-hmm. And after the funeral, Buffy doesn't really want to leave the gravesite. Dawn has already arranged that she wants to go to Willow and Tara's after the service. So they take her, which we'll talk about soon. But we'll stay with Buffy for now, because then we get our little angel cameo.
Ooh, this was trash. I hated this. I don't know why, but like every single man that is in Buffy's orbit, I'm like, stay away from her, you dirty whore. Like, get away from my girl. Yeah. I hated this so much. He was like, oh, sorry, I was late. It's like, you can't show up in the daytime anyway, sir. Like, you know, you have to show up in the nighttime, you idiot. It's not like she's going to invite you, but you can't show up in the middle of the day unless you're wearing like a, trust me. If it was a nighttime funeral, Spike would be there lurching in the background.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Which, by the way, we might as well hit on the tiny Spike moment from the night before where he shows up with flowers for Joyce. And Xander immediately is like, what are you doing here? You're stalking Buffy. You can't be here. And Spike tries to say like, no, I really liked Joyce. She was decent. She didn't put on airs. She always had a nice cuppa for me. And Willow points out he was telling the truth because the flowers, he didn't even have a card with the flowers. Yeah. So seemingly Buffy wouldn't have known who they were from in the first place.
There was no ulterior motives in that moment.
No, we saw how much he laughed at Joyce's dumb jokes, like her stupid stories. Like, he loved them. So he obviously really liked Joyce.
Yeah, he did like Joyce. Yeah. Joyce was hilarious to him.
So funny.
And from the beginning, like, she was accepting-ish of him. Like, she was the whole reason why he got let into the house in the first place.
She invited him in. Yeah.
And, like, in that time, like, wasn't he asking relationship advice about Darla? Not Darla. Sorry. Delulu.
Oh, Delulu. I think Delulu. So, maybe.
I think so. I think
that sounds right to me.
Yeah, he was like, and she was like giving him advice.
They both love passions. Like, they had a lot in common.
Yeah, they did have a lot in common.
That's why he showed up with the flowers. There were no ulterior motives.
I am feeling bad for Spike. I have such a soft heart for the unfortunate. So like, whenever I see poor Spike being bullied, I'm always like, oh. I mean, it happened in Angel too, when they were being mean to Angel, and I'm like, don't, you hate Angel, you hate his guts, but they were being so mean to Angel, I'm like, oh. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just feel so bad for the little people in life.
Angel shows up and Buffy is basically like, she's holding his hand and then they're kind of like snuggling against a tree. And she says how she's really worried about tomorrow because tomorrow is the first day that she doesn't have plans and things scheduled and like things she has to attend to. And so it's really going to be like final tomorrow. And she keeps coming back to what would have happened if she'd gotten there 10 minutes earlier. And Angel says, well, you said the doctors said it wouldn't have made a difference. And she said, they said probably. The exact thing they said was probably. Yeah. And this is very relatable. As a person who is like very much anxious, to keep going back to something someone said and replaying it in your head and picking apart the exact wording and what if in your life away. I feel awful for Buffy here because like they're probably most likely, you know, it's almost certain that Buffy couldn't have done anything. Even if she was there when this whole thing happened, there probably was no saving Joyce. But of course, that's not good enough for Buffy. She's always going to think, what if I was there and I didn't do CPR quick enough and I totally like floundered in the moment, right? In the important moment, I wasn't steady. And I feel like it's really natural for her to try to blame herself as the person who found her mom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is tough. The what ifs can totally haunt you forever. My answer to this is like the only thing that's going to help is time. That's it. I also do want to, I guess, acknowledge the show that, yeah, like the day of the death, the days after are hard, but when you have so much like support and like love coming your way, the worst part is when everybody leaves and it's just quiet. So I thought that was a really insightful thing to touch on because it's a very true feeling that I appreciated that they put in. So
yeah.
I hated all of this conversation. Like, what kind of fucking freaks they are for snuggling in the graveyard. And then they like make out and I'm like, disgusting. Like, get away from this girl. And then he was like, oh, sorry, I shouldn't have done that. And she was like, no, don't worry about it. It's me. It's fine. I can't even do anything right. Like, kiss you. And he's like, no, it's me. I just hate them. I hate them together. I really do. He's literally the worst creature that I've ever laid my eyes on.
It's tough because you can see why Buffy goes back to him in this moment because he knows he's familiar to her, right? Like, he knows her. He knows everything about her. He knew Joyce. He, like, she is just looking for comfort and, like, an escape almost. And so, yeah. like, let's pretend we didn't break up and that you haven't been living in LA for however long at this point. Like, let's just go back to the time when my mom was alive and life was easier. But it is like, okay, but get out of here because you're both going to fall back into something that you know isn't going to work, right? And I'm happy that even though they did a little bit of smooching, it didn't last very long. And they both were able to realize like, okay, maybe I should go because the sun is both coming up, but I don't want to fry. But also because, you know, we can't be this close to each other without other things happening.
What a useless being. Honestly,
we'll talk about Angel in the Angel episode.
I know I'm mad at him from then too, so that's probably it's probably bleeding into one another.
Yeah. Let's talk through Xander and Anya because they have like a smaller little thing here where ever is this. This feels like a very I feel like I see this on TV a lot actually. Whenever there's a death, there's always like one person or couple who use that as like. An aphrodisiac. It's like, yeah. Oh, there was death and now it lives within us and we can fuck all the time.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, the story is that they had a passionate lovemaking session.
Sure. I don't like that you called it that. I don't know why. That just gave, I want to hurl. A passionate lovemaking session? What are we doing here?
I don't know.
They've been fucking. That's what they were doing.
It was especially good, though, is the point. It was extra good.
Okay. So
the orgasms were orgasming.
And you know what?
Story
is. Can I just say, I've liked Xander this season. We all know. So I'm allowed to say whatever I'm going to say right now.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's definitely lazy in bed. Did you see how he was on his back? He did barely anything. If he got up, his hair would be flat indented on the back.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. Yeah. I mean, maybe they switch it up, you know, like maybe sometimes she's on top.
I feel like Anya insists typically on that.
Well, she probably likes to dominate him.
But I do think that Anya would like to spice it up a lot. Like, I do think she's been alive for how long? Like, of course she's going to want to, like, try new things.
Yes, yes. Like,
she's not doing missionary the rest of her life.
No.
But she's
missionary
the one.
It's good once in a while, but, like, I never participate in that sexual position. I can't even think of the last time that I did, honestly.
Participate.
I don't remember the last time I did missionary. I'm serious.
Okay. Anyway, Anya, Joyce's death has gotten Anya thinking about how, you know what, people die all the time. People get born and you can't have one without the other. And like death is a little less sad sex is like a little more exciting. And Xander is like totally thrown off by this. Like, what are you talking about? Because she's starting to talk about babies. And Xander is like, whoa, I'm not ready for any of that.
Honestly, once you get babies involved, you're pretty much fucked.
I understand sex more now. It's not just about two bodies smushing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about life.
You know, I would say it's a kind of about pleasure, and the life aspect is a nice little bonus, I guess.
Yeah, I think if you ask to the general population what is the reason that you're having sex, I don't think the majority of people would be like to make life.
I think it depends on what region you live in. I think Utah is very heavy.
I do think most people would be like, actually, I'm trying to do the opposite of that. I'm trying to prevent all of that from happening.
Well, that's the crazy thing. Like when you spend so much time avoiding it, and then when it's a time where you're like, you want this, it's like, oh shit, like I've spent so much time avoiding this. Like, what do I have to do? Like, what's going on now?
Yeah. So, that's what's going on with them. It just felt like another perspective on like grief to me. I don't know if it's, I mean, obviously it's supposed to mean something larger in terms of like the overall story. I don't know if we're heading towards like mommy and me classes for Anya and Xander, but I don't know. She's a demon, right? Like she's in a human body though. So I assume she can get pregnant.
She's human now. She's not a demon no more. She's
a former demon.
But before that, she was a human. So it's like,
she has eggs, presumably.
Oh, those eggs, you're right. You know, those eggs are probably really, really long. You know what's crazy? Like when you're born, you have all the eggs in your life that you will ever have.
I don't like that.
That's weird. And then if you're pregnant with a girl, theoretically, you have all of your grandchild's eggs or your daughter's eggs. So you have all your grandchildren. You know what I mean?
I do, and it's gross.
It's just interesting. I guess
I do know, and I'm disgusted.
Science. But
science is fucking weird, people. Yeah,
science is weird.
Science is weird.
So yeah, like she is I mean, he kind of got spooked, but also he's like 20 years old, so it's understandable to be
spooked. Yeah, of course I'd be spooked too.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Ben Glory Glib Glob storyline.
Oh, because my God. This pissed me off really bad.
Yes, so please, so please yell at Dr. Ben.
The Jersey accent's gonna come out in this one because it pissed me off so bad. Okay, so Ben, I hate you. I hate you. You are a useless sack of shit, actually, is what you are, Ben. So Ben is hanging out somewhere and Glib Glob comes up and is like, hey, Dr. Ben, how are you? And Dr. Ben is like, doing great. Then Glib Glob is like, BTW, Glory knows that you're trying to have like a little date with Buffy and she encourages it. She thinks it's a great idea, you know, fraternize with the enemy. And Ben is like, I'm not going to do Glory any favors. He does reference her as a sister, his sister, which I thought was interesting because now we're confirmed they're brother and sister. I still don't understand how they're sharing a body, but
no one does.
Okay, we'll just like forget that for now. And then he's like, why would I ever help Glory? I need to protect a poor innocent, and then stops himself. And then Glib Glob is no dummy. Glib Glob is like an innocent. That's an interesting choice of words. And Ben is like, forget what I said. And Glib Glob is like, I will not. And then Glib Glob is like, I'm definitely going to go back to Glory. And then Ben is like, if you're going to do that, I'm going to kill you. And then I'm like, okay, like you spilled the beans. You're stupid as fuck, but like kill him. Good. That's great. But then he didn't even finish the job. He is so dumb. He is the stupidest sack of shit I've ever seen in my life. He ruins everything. He is so dumb, Jessica. How is he so stupid? This motherfucker is no doctor. This motherfucker is stupid as fuck. He ruins everything. Everything. I can't even see how you can defend this man because he is useless.
I am not going to be defending him because I'm not a doctor. I don't have a doctorate. Even I know you should maybe check someone's pulse. Like, I know Glib Glob is nasty and you don't want to touch him, but like check it. Use a stethoscope, check his fucking pulse before you walk away. How is Glib Glob still alive? Right? Like, cause okay, presumably if you think you actually killed Glib Glob, you maybe should dispose of his body. Now, what actually happened is not only did you leave Glib Glob alive, but then Glib Glob's associates, the Glib Globians, if you will, came in, grabbed his alive body, and carried him back to Glory. This is a huge mistake by Ben. So now Glory not only knows that you know what the key, who the key is, but knows you tried to kill Glib Glob. Like, not that she really likes Glib Glob, but he is like the highest ranking member.
Yeah, that's her favorite Glib Glob.
It's her favorite Glib Glob. He is the top of the Glib Glob chain. So he doesn't finish the job. And when Glib Glob returns to Glory, first of all, Glory, Girly Pop, your hair is so gorgeous. Please don't rip it out of your head. That was so scary. I really was scared for you when you started ripping tendrils, your gorgeous, gorgeous curly hair out of your poor little head. Please don't do that. But yeah, she's so excited. I loved the line, Jinx, you robed stud. You're my man. I'm even going to let you slide on the lame toadying on account of your dying and stuff. Like, she's such an icon. She's the best. So now Glory knows that presumably, again, because Ben said an innocent blank, it's like, oh, well, then not only, even if she doesn't know that the key is a human, she knows that Ben knows what the key is. So it's only a matter of time. Now, how you interrogate someone who shares your body, I don't know. It seems like they can only communicate via Glib Glob, basically. Like they're not talking to one another in their
in their minds. I mean, they can leave each other notes, but like, hopefully Ben wouldn't respond to it. But he's so stupid, he would probably see a note and be like, oh, who is this from? I better respond. Yeah. And then he responds and spills all the fucking beans. I found this horrible. I could not believe that he would fuck up this bad.
It was unforgivable. Truly, it's unforgivable. Yeah. Like, and here's the thing. He fucking best go to Buffy and be like, I done fucked up. But he's not gonna, because Buffy has no idea that Ben and Glory are one body. Buffy doesn't know any of that.
Because Dawn used to know, but she forgot.
Right. Well, how? We don't know. So some shit's going down, and freaking stupid Dr. Ben. He's not a doctor. No, because he can't tell what alive versus dead is, which is like feels like should be a test you can pass if you're a doctor.
At the very least. Yeah. He can't even fucking kill somebody. I can't believe it.
There's no way that like a glib glob works that differently than like a human. Nope. You know what I mean?
And glib globs don't even like seemingly have powers from what I can.
They're just uggos. They're big
henchmen,
uggos.
Right?
Henchmen uggos.
It's not like he fought back. He could have easily killed him. I just could not believe it.
It was ridiculous.
I could not believe it. I would have been like, okay, Ben, that was like a really stupid move, but at least like you saved your ass by like killing him and like taking care of it. Mm-hmm. But the fact, because like it wasn't like the other Glib Globs found Glib Glob on the streets. Glib Glob was running late and they were like kind of worried about it, and he was alive enough to walk his ass to Glory's house.
Exactly.
And then the Glib Globs helped him inside. That's how alive he was. He wasn't even bleeding out on the streets.
Yeah, he wasn't leaving like a snail trail of blood. Like, he was totally fine, seemingly. It's messed up. It's not cool, Dr. Ben. You are not great at this, okay? You're not a good doctor. Okay, that's the extent of the Dr. Ben Glory glib glob of it all.
Terrible. It's all terrible. I hate him. I hate this man. I hate all the men, honestly. And honestly, I feel like every single person in this show, this episode, was stupid as fuck. Everyone. Every single one. Maybe not Buffy.
Yeah.
Maybe not Buffy.
And Tara, not Tara, I think.
Not Tara. Maybe not. I mean, Dawn made some stupid decisions, but like, you know,
factor in the 14-year-old grieving her, the loss of her mother.
And if there's potential, I can. But everybody else, because what we're going to talk about next is probably Willow and Tara and how stupid Willow is. Because she has been. And
she sucks as a witch. Like, she is the shittiest witch. And here's the thing. A bad liar, a really bad liar, absolutely trash liar. Here's the thing. With the moment that Dawn appeared on our screens, I was like, she's a witch. She's giving witchy vibes. Like, she's going to become a witch. I was very pro Dawn is a witch.
Yeah.
She's giving witch. And then this episode.
But also, once we found out how curious she was, we were like, oh, she's going to get into some trouble.
Yes. And right on both counts, because this episode, when she immediately wants to go over to Willow and Tara's, I'm like, ooh, witchy sisters, all three of them. Like, this is how many witches you need. You need at least three to make any good spell. And when she goes over there, she's really upset. She, you know, and neither Tara, I mean, Tara has more experience, obviously, but Willow doesn't really know what to say to comfort her. And I really loved, credit to Tara, I really thought she had some really lovely things to say this episode, one of which was when Dawn is like, well, what am I supposed to do now? Tara says, you make a place for her in your heart. It's sort of like she becomes a part of you.
I
thought that was such a lovely sentiment. And like, obviously, it's not like that's going to sink in necessarily like the day of your mother's funeral. But like, that makes sense to me, right? That like, what is that saying? Like, grief is like your love, like continuing on, like without the person there or whatever. That tracks for me. That like, that person, they live on in you, in your memories, in your life.
Just like that Lion King song. Why am I always referencing Lion King songs? He lives in you.
This is in the second one, isn't it? Because we've talked about this before.
Originally, it was in the play, like the musical on Broadway. And I think they implemented it into the second one. The last song that I referenced was a different song.
Okay.
Yeah, that
you
one.
You're just talking about Lion King so much.
I don't know why, because the, I mean, honestly, the songs are bops, but
they're great. Yeah, the actually, I've seen the Lion King on Broadway, yeah, so
we
maybe
saw
I,
it, we saw it. Well, actually, we saw half of it together, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, good God! But I think we did hear that song, right?
Yeah, it was in. There's like the first act, and then it comes back in the second act, and it's exactly okay. Like this because Simba is like, man, like, I don't have a dad. I'm really sad. And Rafiki mm-hmm. was like, it's okay because he lives in you. And then Simba's like, I don't understand. And then Rafiki is like, he lives in you, baba, be da baba. He lives in me. Oh, it's so good. It's actually
like I'm there again.
Yeah, it's my favorite song from the play, actually. Wow. It really is. Because I think, like, once again, I can, like, relate to it.
The sentiment,
because,
yeah.
Yeah, I, too, have, just like Simba, have a dead dad. So I can just relate to Simba. Me and uh-huh. Simba are just two BFFs, you know? Yeah. I have the responsible of being the king, too. But then
you know what? This
away.
Is funny because you don't do Grey's Anatomy. You've never done Grey's Anatomy. But no. In the show, there's a moment where one of the characters welcomes the other character into the quote-unquote like dead dad club.
Oh yeah,
okay. And it's like so lovely because the character who's like doing the welcoming is like the opposite of like empathetic and sympathetic. Mm-hmm. Like she is very structured, very like mm-hmm. strict and hard mm-hmm. around the edges.
That Meredith and- Grey.
No.
Oh.
And so she it's a really lovely moment and like a very like you don't want to be in the club, but it just happens to you. And then just membership happens. Is lifetime. Like that's yeah, it.
That,
you know?
That's
I don't remember the lines, cool. But I do remember that moment.
Yeah. But anyway, I think it's I agree. It's a nice sentiment. Tara is very wise, very insightful.
The yeah. And she says, like, we will not mess with life and death. Like, because yeah. Dawn wants to bring Joyce back, and Tara immediately is like, we don't do that stuff. Like, maybe there is a possibility that some witches do it, but it's not good to mess with life and death.
Yeah, this is pretty much a witch law. Like, yeah. no witches really fuck with this because of the bad shit, the repercussions of it. In every single rendition, like nobody's bringing people back to life. It's not good. But Dawn is very set on this. And I understand, like, what can I do? Like, if you had that power, then how could you not want to try? And I think like the also like another interesting thing about losing somebody is like how much you dream about them coming back, and like those are always like bittersweet. Like sometimes they're like very very spooky, and sometimes they're very healing, and like they say stuff to you in moments in life where you're like, wow, I really need to hear that from my dad, but or mom or whomever. But yeah, I think that I don't know. So basically there's like one book that has more information on this, and they're like, don't look at our books. And Tara and Willow have to go to class, and they leave her Dawn in the dorm room. And before they leave, Willow does a little like spell to pull out this book that in particular gives more information on it. And do you understand what Willow's intentions were in this moment?
Because she says later that, oh, it's just a history book. It might answer some of her questions. I don't think it could do any harm. No. Like, here's the thing, Willow. Unless you are 100% sure that there are not explicit instructions on resurrections in that book, don't pull it out for her. Like, don't direct her towards it. It is so dangerous, especially because this is what pissed me off even more about it, I think, is it's different than Willow sitting down with Dawn and going through the book. She doesn't even have any sort of supervision. You are basically sending her on a path alone to do this. So not only is she more likely to make a mistake and like fuck up the spell, which is going to be even more traumatizing, But like, she, you're making her who's not, she's not even a witch. She's not even like a level two witch. She's a level nothing witch. You're letting her go off and read this book that you're not even sure of the contents of. Like, it is so beyond stupid. It is so dumb.
Irresponsible. So it was ridiculous. I don't even understand like how she thought that this wouldn't be the outcome, but more yada yada throughout the episode. So like, okay. So basically Dawn goes to work at the store and she kind of does this crazy thing. It wasn't even, she was like, hey, like I want to help Giles. Like, by the way, like maybe you can tell me like, what was it like, do you know, she
says, what's the, where's the off limits stuff, like what stuff should I not be touching?
That was crazy.
Giles, get a fucking brain, my guy.
Giles is like, here's the exact coordinates of where you can find it within the store.
Oh my god. Like, and it's not even like locked anywhere. It's like, oh, just climb up that ladder and there it is.
And Dawn was so like obvious about it too. She's like, where are like the bad ingredients that I shouldn't be touching? And like, where can I find them? And like, what are they exactly? And Giles just like blurts it out. I thought like Giles was incredibly stupid in this moment too. Yeah. And once again, irresponsible. And then also, he just has zero awareness of his surroundings. It reminded me a lot of like the Glory thing, where Glory came in and purchased two ingredients that if you put together, it's known to be like cause absolute fuckery. Yeah. And like, he once again is like, I guess it's because he's distracted. Like, he's doing multiple things at once. He's like researching and doing this and doing that. But it's just,
and I think he's also been heavily involved in all of the planning and stuff with Buffy at the funeral. And like, we see, because we're already talking about Giles, might as well mention that, like, we see in the episode at one point, he's like sitting down in his apartment, putting on a vinyl record of the same song him and Joyce listened to in Band Candy. So it sounds like he's like grieving or like reminiscing almost. I did think the grief is hitting him too, you know.
You're right. I did think I would have put so much money that they were endgame somehow. I
like, at least one more romp in the stacks, you know?
Yeah. Like, I just was not anticipating, really. It makes sense now that we know, but like, I wasn't anticipating Joyce's death. Like, I really thought that like him and Giles and Joyce would be like, be something, you know what I mean? It just made sense, but we can't have nice things. So yeah, that's a good point. Like, Giles is probably grieving as well.
But also he's very bad at this, like you said. Like, we cannot discount the fact that he did this literally earlier in the season with the Glory thing. And now like, he's letting Dawn basically, and I get it. He says, well, maybe she wants a distraction, right? Like, she wants to be helpful. She says like, she wants something to take her mind off of things. That's totally fair. But maybe use your brain a little bit, Giles, when she asks like specifically, where are the off limits things? You know, like, come on. And shout out to Anya's line of like, she's gonna fondle the money. I love Anya so much. She is so bothered.
Well, because she's feeling threatened, her job security. Yeah. Because honestly, Giles could probably pay Anya Dawn less than Anya for the same work, which is, you know, it's very concerning for Anya. Yeah. I would understand that too.
Yeah. So Dawn gathers all the necessary supplies. She is then set to do the resurrection spell, which is by the grave. And Spike, of course, shows up and he offers to help her. And he says that she says like, oh, I know you're just doing this because you're like obsessed with Buffy. And he says, absolutely not. Like, do not tell her. She will literally kill me. Mm-hmm. He says, I just don't like seeing the Summers women take it so hard on the chin is all. I'm dead serious. You breathe a word of this to Buffy, I'll see to it that you end up in the ground. So like, I want to know your thoughts on Spike's intentions. Is he being honest here? Like, is it his own form of like, I want Joyce back, so like, I'm going to help with this.
When do you think was the last time somebody took care of Spike in the way that like Joyce would have? Like, Let me get you some tea or some dinner, or like, let me, like, you know, sit around like a dinner table or like a kitchen with you. I think that there's like some aspect of like Spike. I mean, like, we know that Spike enjoyed Joyce's company as like a friend, but maybe also kind of as like a caretaker in a way as well. So I think all can be true. Like, I think that there's like, I think that like there's a chunk of it of like, he wouldn't mind Joyce coming back. I think there's a chunk of it of like, let me help Dawn because I kind of like her and I probably feel bad for her. And then I think that there's also an aspect of like, if I do this for Buffy, like, maybe I can get into her good graces again if it works out well. So I think it's honestly all of the above, which is, I mean, he's such a multifaceted character. Like, there's always some sort of like selfish intentions for Spike. Like, it's just like innate. But I also think that he feels bad for like the whole situation, and he's not getting access to a grieving Buffy. Like, he's not able to be with her and comfort her. So I think he's trying to figure out how to do things for her from afar.
Yeah.
And this classifies as that, even though it's like not the best idea.
I also think that Spike is smart enough to know that Dawn is doing this regardless of if she has help. Think in his mind, both for Dawn and for Buffy, he doesn't want the spell to go awry. Like, if it goes badly and she comes back as like a zombie, that's even more traumatizing, both for Dawn and for Buffy. And I think he, like, there's this kinship that he has with Dawn that I'm really loving, where they both feel like outsiders and they can kind of bond over that. They both feel like they don't quite belong because Dawn isn't really human, or, you know, whatever, she isn't real. And Spike is like a solo guy. Like, he's the only vampire. Not only that, but he's the only vampire around this group, and he's the only vampire with a chip. So he doesn't belong to the vampires and he doesn't belong to the Scoobies. So where does he belong? And I think that Dawn kind of feels that as well. And so I think that part of it is just to help Dawn, but also like prevent Dawn from making a massive mistake, because he knows a guy, right? Like, he's way more familiar with this sort of a thing than Dawn is. So even if he himself doesn't know how to help, he can bring her to someone who maybe has a better chance of telling them what they need to do.
Yeah, I think that there's like, I think like that was the excuse that he gave last time of like, I forget what the situation was, where he's like, it was like breaking into the magic shop. Like, you know, I'm trying to supervise her because like, it's better that I'm there with her to protect her than nobody. So that was his excuse last time, and it carries over here. But then also he's also like giving Dawn the like more like help or ammunition to actually do the harm, like the spell.
He's aiding her in doing the thing she shouldn't do. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, it's very like, once again, like it's like multifaceted. Like, I think that there's, because honestly, like if he's any familiar with any of this, then he should know that this is like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But he's like also such like a little chaos monster that he's like, oh, it could be interesting. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
I think like there's a lot going on in his noggin. So they go to this like creepy guy, and he's some sort of a demon or something. Like, he has a tail. He has like black eyes. He's like a little weird. And
yeah, he's really strange. He like thinks he recognizes Spike from as like a guy who hangs down at the corner mart and plays dominoes. Like, he's very off-putting. He like steals a bit of Dawn's hair to look at it.
Uh-huh. Well, which, this is also another thing. Did they need the hair? Because he was like, oh, like, you know, this, your mother's a good candidate because she has good DNA. You have good DNA.
I think that's the only thing that was for, was to like, but again, because Dawn is like,
yeah,
created, like, I don't know if that's even true necessarily. Exactly.
That's what I wanted to know. Like, we, you know, fast forward a little, Dawn does the spell and something is coming to the house.
Yeah.
But we don't know what it is. And would Dawn's mom, would Joyce even show up at the door since Dawn is basically fabricated? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It felt very strange to me because
You needed the picture in order for it to do something. So I
don't know that the hair was like a spell component. I think it was just an assessment of the likelihood of this to succeed. But yet again, because Dawn isn't really from Joyce, I don't know if it's accurate. But he says like, oh, you're going to need the egg of the Gora, which is like a demon that apparently there's one in town in the sewers, whatever.
Very convenient. Very convenient. Yeah.
And he does warn her, like, you know, I don't know that she'll come back exactly like she was. She might be a little bit off.
Blah, blah, blah. We see this so many times in so much media.
Yeah. But when they say goodbye, they like shake hands. And when they shake hands, his eyes get like, there's no whites in his eyes. It goes like all black. And that was really weird. Like, I don't know if it's, I almost thought there were ulterior motives in him taking her hair. Like, he was doing that just to say, oh, she's a good candidate. But really, there was something up with Dawn's hair that he recognized. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this guy comes back in terms of like Glory seeking him out or finding him and finding out that Dawn is the key through him or something.
Yeah, it felt like the whole thing felt very off. Like, I think that we were meant to be like, ooh, like, I mean, I wouldn't trust this guy, but they gave him, he gave them like good intel. Like, they went to the spa where they were told to go, and the monster and the egg was there. They go down together because Dawn's going to be the one that grabs the egg. Spike is the one that's going to fight the monster. Mm-hmm. Stupid Dawn freaking breaks the first egg, and they could have gotten out really easily, but she dropped it like a moron. And then they had to go back and like kind of like Spike, almost, it got a little dicey, but they got the egg. They do the spell, or she does the spell alone.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Tara discovers that the book is missing. And then she confronts Willow. Willow lies really, really badly. I'm surprised that Tara didn't like say, why are you lying to me right now? I can tell that you're lying.
Yeah, this was insane. Like, okay, first of all, even beyond the fact that Willow is probably the worst liar I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Usually if your partner is lying to you, you can like, even if you don't know they're lying, there's a vibe you can like sense, right? Like if you are with someone, you usually get to know them pretty well and therefore can like determine when something is a little off. Then compile that with the fact that Willow sucks at lying. I don't understand how Tara is not like, hey, like, what are you talking? Like, why are you being so weird about this? Like, what are you keeping out of the story?
Especially
like,
because she's so insightful that I feel like she would pick up on that weirdness.
Yeah. But luckily, Tara has half a brain. So they call, at least half a brain. So they call Buffy and they let her know. And of course, this leads to Buffy coming in right as Dawn is like finishing up the spell. And then there's this huge confrontation between the two of them. And I have a lot of the dialogue written down because I just thought it was like, I don't know, so perfect. It felt very spot on for like what this might be like to be in their situation. Mm-hmm. Where Dawn says, I'm not like you. I don't have anybody. And Buffy says, of course you do. You have me. Dawn says, no, I don't. You won't even look at me. It's so obvious you don't want me around, which therefore makes sense why Dawn wanted to go to Willow and Tara's, because she's like, I just want to get out of Buffy's hair. Like, I don't want to be a burden to her. And Buffy says, that's not true. Dawn says, yes, it is. Mom died. And it's like, you don't even care. And like, this is heartbreaking, of course, for like Buffy to hear. So she is like so taken aback, has tears in her eyes. She says, of course I care. How can you even think that? And Dawn says, how can I not? You haven't even cried. You've just been running around like it's some big chore or something, cleaning up after mom's messes. And this is when Buffy slaps Dawn. Mm-hmm. And like, holy crap. Like, I don't know about you, Sarah, but I was like totally flabbergasted that she smacked her. Like, I was just like so, I mean, I was as shocked as freaking Dawn was when it happened.
Don't hit your sister, I guess.
It was bad. And I can understand how Dawn is feeling this way, that because Buffy is compartmentalizing all of this and like taking on the role of the executor of the will, almost like I'm going to plan everything. I'm going to really throw myself into planning mode to avoid having to feel the feelings that come along with grief. That to Dawn, it just like looks like you don't care. Like you're not crying. You're not sad. What's wrong with you?
It's hard because everybody deals with grief differently. We know this. So obviously Buffy's like very affected by all of this, but how is Dawn supposed to know if Buffy doesn't let her in any? So in Dawn's mind, like she doesn't care. And she hasn't cared. And that makes Dawn feel extremely alone in all of this. It makes it such a tough situation. But also Buffy is not the type of person to open up like that. So
she doesn't want to be a burden to Dawn either. I think I think she's worried if she cries, she doesn't want to make Dawn cry. She doesn't want to make Dawn upset, even though Dawn is already upset. Like there's nothing that it's better to be with each other. And like having these moments than trying to hide it from her.
Yeah. She has to get off of this though. Like it's going to be, we've been saying this for so long. Like she has to get off from the, I need to protect everybody around me, like shield everybody from everything. But that's been her thing the entire show. So it doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere anytime soon.
No. So Buffy is like astonished that she hit her sister. She says, Dawn, I've been working. I've been busy because I have to. And Dawn says, no, you've been avoiding me. Buffy says, I'm not. I have to do these things because when I stop, then she's really gone. And I'm trying, Dawn. I'm trying really hard to take care of things, but I don't even know what I'm doing. Mom always knew. And this is when Dawn says, nobody asked you to be mom. Buffy says, well, who's going to be if I'm not, huh, Dawn? Have you even thought about that? Who's going to make things better? Who's going to take care of us? I didn't mean to push you away. I just couldn't let you see me. And then she starts crying. I don't know what we're going to do. I'm scared. And this is when there's a knock at the door. And Buffy goes to answer the door. And at that exact moment, Dawn rips up the photo, which we know from the creepy guy they went to see that will end the spell immediately. And when Buffy opens the door, no one is standing there.
Well, that is a very convenient out for this spell. Just ripping a photo.
Can you imagine if Joyce comes back and then like somewhere down the line, they like accidentally rip the photo?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what this spell's ass. It's absolute ass. Like the way to eliminate this spell, like you would have to put this picture in a vault like it's with lasers protecting it, like there's no freaking way. So we see a shadow. We don't actually see who is coming, if it's a version of Joyce, if it's actually Joyce, is it a zombie? We don't see it. But we leave this episode like seeing like, oh, like they have each other and
they like start hugging and Buffy's really like finally like breaking down in front of Dawn.
It was a fine episode. Like I feel like it was definitely lighter than the last episode, which I think that we needed. But I think like I was maybe anticipating the last episode to be more like this episode tonally, and you know what I mean, like not as heavy, but so you know what I mean, like I like it's understandable. Like I just think that we probably both thought that this was the episode that we were going to get last episode.
I didn't think we would pick right up from the end of the episode before it. Like I didn't think we would be in the moment of Buffy finding out for an entire episode. I really felt like it was going to be this, which is like the planning of the funeral and the kind of the fallout of the death and all of that. But yeah, I mean, obviously this is not the, you know, the show's not going to move on like nothing ever happened next episode, obviously. But I am curious to see how specifically Buffy handles things next episode, because like, to her point, she has done all of the planning and all of that. So like, now is the time where she's really going to actually be like fully taking on the brunt of the grief. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested to see kind of how that is depicted, and also like what if they get into the logistics of like what's going on with the dad, and is Buffy going to be watching over Dawn, and like, you know, I mean, I think that's at least like something that isn't, we had a mention of Buffy's dad, which means the show is recognizing that like there is a father somewhere, maybe, if he's not dead.
Yeah, we're setting it up. What's the probability that we're going to get like a fluffy monster of the week episode as a palate cleanser next week?
There's no way. The show doesn't just forget. Yeah, this is episode 17. Next episode is episode 18.
I think we're in for some fuckery soon.
Okay.
Maybe that's wishful thinking.
I feel like they're like, let's give us fuckery and Angel. We don't need the fuckery.
Oh my God. Cordy's Corner. What a joke. I watched it and I was up the entire time.
Well, because Harmony was there. Like you predicted.
I didn't really think it was going to happen, but it happened. So good for me. Context clues. That's pretty cool. I did like this episode. But the only thing that I liked about it was the Harmony and Cordy scenes. So that makes me feel like what I want is a detective show with Cordelia and Harmony and nobody else from this show.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when Harmony steps in and immediately is like, girl, the fuck happened to your hair? I was like on board. I was like, yes, call out Cordelia's fucking horrible hair. I loved their wine night together with the, oh, Cordelia, how I love to feel ya. Yeah,
it was fun. It was so really fun. And I think like that's the reason why Buffy works for probably both of us as a show more so than Angel, because of like the fun moments like this felt very, and maybe it's because like we are women, we relate to having a slumber party and doing each other's nails and talking about like high school bullshit. Like I'm sure like we relate more to that than like whatever nonsense Angel is up to, but yeah, it's so much more fun for me to watch Cordelia and Harmony and their dynamic and like just like everything that they got into throughout the episode, like going to the karaoke bar, trying to get a gauge on like Harmony's future, and like the, what's his name, the host is like, I can't help you.
Yeah, you have to stick close to Cordelia, basically. Yeah. I love Harmony's song choice of The Way We Were is just like incredible. I love the misunderstanding about Harmony being a vampire and Cordelia thinking that she's a lesbian. Yeah, that was very funny, especially because we rope Willow into that storyline. Yeah.
Big Three's Company realness.
So funny. And this is also when Willow tells Cordy about her relationship with Tara, and she's like, oh, okay, well, congrats, like whatever. Yeah. That was really great. And Harmony just, I loved the like slow-mo walk of like the crew, and then Harmony is just there. Yeah,
you pull out. I mean, I would have loved a like 5-episode arc, a 3-episode arc.
Totally agree.
Of Harmony being part of the team, and like, you know, because there's times where she really does seem like, I just want to help, but she's so like, but she, it's very, very much like, oh, she would spill her coffee on the keyboard.
Right. Well, the thing is what Harmony actually reminds me of is like a less competent version of early Cordelia, mm-hmm. where like Cordelia has strengths. It just took her a minute to like come into those strengths and like to really excel and not be so just like, in, you know, self-interested, self-obsessed. Harmony unfortunately has like the aspect of, well, she's also a vampire, and so like she has like some inherent
also evilness. Dumb as rocks.
She's also really stupid. And I also really love the moment of they're like, they have to go to work, and so she's gonna leave Harmony behind in her apartment, and she's like, I don't want to be here with the ghost, like I don't want to be alone with the ghost. Yeah, this whole episode worked for me because the idea of a vampire pyramid scheme cult thing was very funny.
Yeah, that was funny too, because especially I don't remember when like the Ponzi scheme, is that what it was?
Scheme? Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi,
yeah.
Pomegranate Ponzi scheme. What year was that?
I don't know.
Pomskies.
Pomsky's scheme. Yes. Scheme. All the Pomskies in the world were getting up to no good.
But I mean, I can't. I sound so illiterate. I apologize. But anyway, like I feel as though like pyramid schemes like always run rampant. Like even to this day. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where people were losing thousands and thousands of dollars of the ugliest leggings that ever existed.
But you can be your own boss, Sarah. You can work from home. You can make your own hours.
It's so bad because like, it's like we've heard it for so long, and like it's a device that typically targets women.
Yeah.
So it's so bad. Like, have you ever had like a friend that has gone into this shit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's so bad because like,
you have to like,
cause you have to go to the party
or you have to go.
And it's like, you have to like help them because like you want them to make money, but like then they wind up only like asking their friends and family.
Yeah.
For the sales.
The lip sense one, I remember really getting a lot of people. Like when I was a kid, it was more so the like Tupperware / Pampered Chef parties. But
well,
then
that was actually like the Pampered Chef, like those were good products, like
they weren't as bad. Yeah, I have something products from Pampered Chef that I still use to this day. Like Pampered it holds Chef, up.
Yeah, I know, but then it like turns into like turned into absolute fucking crap. Like
yeah, lip sense was the big one that I was like in my early 20s, like it was a lot of my like, you know, people were getting into,
I know,
that one.
And then they want to like recruit you, and it's like, I don't want to. It's like, oh, so yeah, I thought that it was like the pyramid scheme was really funny. This guy seemed to be like a real motivator. Like basically you recruit two or turn two
and the rest is food.
Woohoo.
Woo! Yeah, it was very funny. They had all these like different colored like cloaks or whatever. And so they send in Harmony to like basically be a mole, a spy. And instead, of course, she joins the cult immediately, turns on the rest. And Cordy says like, okay, I'm not going to kill you, but you need to leave. You need to get out of town right now. I'm sad to see Harmony go.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed by how this ended. I would have rather Harmony actually tried to be good and it kind of just flopping eventually, because rather than like her betraying everybody right away, I was a little disappointed. Like
But I mean, it was funny, but also like I wanted Harmony around for longer. So I was just sad. But throughout the whole episode, Angel has been trying to win back over Cordelia because like she's one of the biggest like anti-Angel people in the crew now. She is like, we're not friends. Like you may work here for us, but we are not friends. So this whole episode, he's been very like trying to get in her good graces. And I love that the thrift donation of her clothes comes back around and he buys her love by buying her a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah. I thought this was interesting because the line of, because he was like, I gave it to people in need. And Cordelia was like, I'm people in need. And in a way, she kind of was like,
she's a poor.
She's poor. She didn't have much, but like she had her clothes, which made her feel like her true self, like her old self. So taking that from her was another way for her to realize like it was a part of her identity, like, and it, like he took it away from her without her permission. So I kind of understand, like it seems like very petty, like, oh, you took my clothes and stole it, but like she doesn't have like the means that she used to. She doesn't have the friends that she used to. She doesn't like, we see her talk to Harmony about like, I used to be like rich, beautiful, and popular, whatever she said. And she doesn't feel like she's any of those things, but the clothes made her feel like that was, she was still who she used to be. And then like, I can understand how Angel could be like, well, it's just clothes. And for Cordelia, it's like, no, that was like my identity. Like, this was like part of me. But yeah, I, you know, like buying her back with like the love of clothes, it was funny. I kind of felt bad for Angel, like I said earlier in the episode, of like, we're not friends. But then he kind of like pissed me off. He said something, I think it was like maybe about the harmony stuff, like that was before like the betrayal happened. And then I was like kind of irked by him. Wesley, I really don't like Wesley in this episode. No, I feel like he's an asshole, and I don't like him. I don't know. I don't like any of the, I don't like any of the guys. Like, I mean, I don't have a problem with Gunn, but
I think Gunn had some really funny lines this episode. I love him being like, so we're just not killing vampires anymore. Like when Harmony shows up, and then when he says like, okay, but when we actually catch this vampire, we are going to kill it. Right.
Yeah. Let me just specify. It's just this vampire. And then also this vampire that we're not killing.
Yeah.
All these other vampires are okay. Yeah. I don't think I have a problem with Gunn, but like, I don't really like Wesley. I feel like he's very like, because like he kind of got like on his high horse essentially this episode.
Well, yeah, because Angel got him shot, really. Like that's how he views blah, blah, it. Blah.
He's fine. He's alive. Like all is forgiven, right?
I guess. So. I mean, he is like definitely taking the course of, now you work for me, so I'm gonna treat you like garbage as like penance for a while.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I don't like eye for an eye. It doesn't work for me, dog.
The whole world goes blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine. Like this episode mostly worked because of Harmony, and especially Harmony and Cordelia together. So it was a silly episode. I wish Harmony was sticking around, but I think maybe this also is like a nice way to show us that Cordelia really has grown a lot in like many seasons.
I knew that though. Well,
no, I know. But the, you know, for the dumber viewers, Sarah, for the dumber viewers, you know, not like you, the one who is eagle-eyed, you know.
I am stupid. I don't even know what a Ponzi scheme is. No, I do know what it is. I just don't
you
know.
You don't know how to say it.
I don't know how to say it, and I don't know what year it took place.
So yeah, those were our two episodes. We are getting so close to the end of the season. It's kind of crazy.
Is it 22 or 23?
22 episodes. So okay. Next week is episode 18, season 5, episode 18, Intervention.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know what, like who's getting an intervention.
Who needs it? I don't know.
Maybe Spike?
I was gonna say that.
You know what I can really think of.
It's like we can't really target Buffy. Like, let her be.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No.
Oh, maybe
no.
Willow. Willow, you are horrible.
A terrible witch.
You're terrible, terrible witch. I think you should give it up. Quit while you're ahead.
Yes. Maybe. I don't know. But that's next week's Buffy episode. And then for Angel, season 2, episode 18, Dead End.
Okay.
Oh no, is Cordy going to be like, I have dead ends. I have to cut my hair even shorter.
I was actually going to give myself a trim. I haven't gotten a haircut recently.
Yeah.
I need a haircut.
I probably should get one, but I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
That's the way it always is though.
And
we will be joined by a guest, the one and only Tom Palmer will be chatting with us.
There's a possibility that I won't be here next week, but I'm not quite sure. I could be.
Yes.
It'll be a surprise.
We'll see. It'll be a huge surprise. We'll see what happens. But we're getting so close to the end of season 5 of Buffy and season 2 of Angel. I can't believe it. We do have a voicemail to play. I almost forgot. So we did get a voicemail from the one and only Joy. So I'm going to play it and we'll see what she has to say.
Hey guys, it's Joy. Listen, I've been consistently listening to you guys every week and I've been loving all your Buffy stuff. If you're trying to tell me there's a connection between Ben and Glory, are you seeing things? I don't know. I'm not seeing anything there. That's weird. I'm actually not here about Buffy though. I am here because I am poo-pooing, I guess you could call it. You know, I thought about sending an email, but it would have been way too long, and I didn't want it to be long. I didn't want to be like lecturing or reprimanding or anything like that, because your opinions are your opinions, and I love you guys have opinions, and it's great. But I'm just getting just frustrated with how you see the Angel show, because yes, it's not a show geared towards teen girls. It's geared towards more adults, so the themes are a bit darker, but that doesn't mean it's nihilistic. It's grounded in kind of a reality. Like the thing with Harlan Manners, with the home office being Earth, it's not that it's hopeless. It's the same thing I've been telling you, that if nothing matters, if nothing we do matters, then all that matters is what we do, right? So that's the whole point of the show, is they're never going to win. It's not a winning, you know, good against evil. That's not a fight you can win, like, ever, because there will always be corruption and evil. We're seeing it right now. Like, it's just, it's like a fact of life. But if good people are there and they help people and they do things to make the world a better place, well, then that's all you can do. And then you can feel happy doing that. Sorry, I'm walking my dog. Oh, God, I'm out of breath. Anyway, so I just keep an open mind. I know you guys don't like the character Angel, but I feel like that's clouding you to see the greatness in the show, because the show is so good. Oh, my God. Just because he keeps saving blondes doesn't mean he only saves blondes, guys. Yes, he has a type. Who doesn't? But it's L.A. Like, there are blonde women all over the place. It's kind of hard for him not to find a blonde woman, right? Oh. Anyway, told you her hair. Told you Cordelia's hair was ridiculous. Okay, that's all the poo-pooing I'll do. I love you guys, and can't wait to hear more. And bye!
Jessica, what do you have to say about your bad attitude against Angel and the fact that you're falling asleep?
Just me, only me.
Why are you so evil?
Oh gosh, so funny. First of all, I love the point that Joy made about it's LA. Like, of course, that's blondes true. Everywhere. Yeah, there's that's blonde really everywhere. Funny and spot yeah. on. No, I think that, like, I think the difficulty is Joy is correct in that tonally it feels like the shows are very different. And I think maybe, I don't know about you, Sarah, but like my expectation was different, I think, about what the show would be. And I think I just don't have the level of investment in the characters that I do in Buffy. Like, we love Buffy as a main character. And because we don't love Angel, like, we didn't, to be fair, our hatred of Angel was on Buffy as well. Like, it's not like he moved to Angel and we were like, now we don't like him. And obviously he's not the only one around, right? Like, we love Cordelia. You're not the biggest Wesley fan currently. I still enjoy Wesley. And Gunn, I thought he was very funny this episode. So, like, the cast of characters works for me. I think that, like, the viewpoint that Joy was saying is very interesting and not how I took it. Where it's like, oh, even though the world sucks, we still need good people in it to make it better, right? Like, it's more hopeful than how I had viewed it, because the show is both very, like, physically dark and, like, metaphorically dark. So I don't know. I also think it's like, there are great shows that some people just don't vibe with, right? Like, it's just not for you. Like, I would put, as an example, I would put Succession as, like, one of the best shows of all time to just exist. And there are still going to be people who it just does not click for, because it's not their show. It's not for them. And maybe that's the case. I don't know. I don't dislike Angel, I think, as much as you have a hard time with it, Sarah, but it certainly doesn't click for me as well as Buffy does. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's a great point, Jess, because, like, I'm typically somebody, I don't watch a ton of dramas, like, or, like, a ton of, like, prestige television, not calling Angel prestige television, but, like, I tried an episode of Succession. It really stressed me out. Like, I've Fair never enough. Seen Game of Thrones. Like, I've never seen a lot of shows that are very, like, acclaimed but are more serious. And I like a lot of, like, I'm more of a teen drama or a sitcom type of person when I do watch shows. And I think, like, that's mm-hmm. a good point, Jess, that, like, sometimes, like, it could be, like, a great show, but it doesn't click with you for whatever reason. You know, like, I will still keep watching Angel as I am advised by Michael from San Francisco. And
yeah, you're off the hook, by the way, for a little while. Yeah. So you don't need to watch Dead End, which is the one that hopefully Corey does not cut her hair again.
But it's just more so that, you know, like podcasting or watching TV for podcasting is also very different than watching TV for enjoyment. And sometimes the having to talk about it aspect takes away from enjoying the show at times. Like maybe if I was watching Angel, but not having to talk about it or not having to put my whole ass into it. I mean, I'm not putting my whole ass into it. Like I'm like barely talking about it, but I like, maybe it would be different. Like I can think about a couple of shows. And I'm sure you can too, Jess, of like throughout the years podcasting about something and being like, gosh, like if I didn't have to talk about this every week, would I be enjoying this more? And the answer is probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally agree with that. There are times where it's you probably would enjoy it more if you're not going at it with a fine tooth comb so often. I feel bad. Like I know people love Angel and it can't be easy to love something and then have
your two idiots talk about
how
much they hate it. I mean, honestly, like I can understand that. Like, I think that if I sat here and like talk shit about Succession for an hour and a half,
have an easy time of it. Yeah. It'd be very difficult to hear that sort of a thing. I mean, I feel bad. I wish I loved the show Angel. I think I met it most of the time. I like it occasionally. It's rare that I like love it. I'd say that's like a pretty rare occasion. Who knows? Like, I know there's some changes coming up to the show of Angel. I think it was AJ who'd said like it's going to get a lot like zanier or funnier or something like that.
There's a tonal shift that can like be a huge difference that, you know, I also like, if we're going, like we've said this a billion times, Angel feels very like Batman. I don't like Batman. I like X-Men. X-Men is more fun than Batman. You know what I mean? Like totally. Or Spider-Man. Spider-Man is like a fun superhero that's like kind of light at a lot of times. There could be dark times too. Like I don't like Batman and I don't like those tones. So if we are leaving Batman a little bit and going more towards Robin, then who the fuck knows? Maybe I would enjoy it more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to just wait and see. Like, again, most of the people who are sending in feedback, who are listening, have seen all of both shows. So we haven't yet. Like, it's certainly possible. I'm open to my mind changing, obviously. Like I would love to like fall in love with the show in the way that a lot of other people have. I just don't know that I'm there yet. And I think part of it is because I think my expectations were very different from what the reality of it was. So that probably hurt it. And I think it also, like we've said like so many times, like when Angel is not your favorite and like a lot of the show requires an investment in the character of Angel, right? Like, you know, I think that's going to hurt a little bit. He's a little too broody for me. He's a little too unfun. He's a little too serious, just for me personally. And I'm hoping that changes. Like, who's to say, you know, I apologize if we like totally trash it or like don't and miss a lot of the like metaphors or like we're missing a lot of the like themes and shit, like because we're not, again, we're watching it to podcast about it, but like I'm not watching both the episode twice like I do with Buffy. You know, I'm not being like a very diligent note taker and everything when I watch Angel. So like we are not covering that show separately. You know what I mean? It is intended to be like a 5-minute little Cordy's Corner. Maybe we're missing things too. Like it's certainly possible. But yeah, well, I mean, I think both of our minds are open to like changing on the show overall. Just really wish Harmony was around because like, I feel like we would have come around big time if Harmony was there to stay.
That would have been a change. I enjoyed her on this episode.
But she was so fun.
The people were right. I think like AJ said last week, Sarah, you'll enjoy this episode more. That is a true statement. I did enjoy this episode more because, but not because of what any of the boys did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we'll see. Also, do you a quick question before we totally wrap things up? Yeah. Do you see what I was saying about like the Angel Cordelia of it all? Is there anything there? Am I losing my mind?
I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like they're more giving off like Big Brother, Little Sister vibes. But,
okay. I could see that.
But I don't know. I mean, like we always say, like the opposite of love isn't
disgust. It's like apathy or hatred. It's apathy.
Right. And like her feeling like pissy towards him means that she cares about him.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's not like there's nothing. There's no connection between them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what happens with them. I don't know. I was just like, there's something there. But also, like you said, it could just be like friendship, sisterly, brotherly sort of a thing. But yeah, that's everything we've got. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Buffy and Angel Intervention and Dead End. So that should be interesting. In the meantime, also, if you want to check out You Had Me at Podcasts, Stuart and I so far have covered, we've covered three movies, Say Anything, 10 Things I Hate About You, and The Holiday most recently for the holiday season. So if you're interested in that, check it out. Bridesmaids will be next, which I love Bridesmaids.
Is that a rom-com?
Yeah. Stuart said the same thing when I first brought it up. Yes, there is a romance storyline in that film.
Is there?
Yes, the main character falls in love with the cop guy.
Okay.
Anyway.
I mean, I don't mean to shit on your pick, but I feel like if
it wasn't my pick, it was Stuart's pick.
Oh, if I had to like think about what Bridesmaid, I would think it's a show about friends.
It's well, that was something we talked about. That was something we talked about. That I think it's an interesting romantic comedy, and that there's a lot more commentary on what happens when your friend gets in a relationship and like how that affects your friendship. So
yeah.
I think that'll definitely come up because that's a huge part of the film. But yeah, there's also a romantic aspect. There's also a
Kristen Wiig has a love interest in that movie.
Yes, the cop.
What cop?
There's a cop that she dates. Like there's the whole carrot scene where they're talking about baby carrots and how he's like the ugly carrot. It's like a whole thing.
I don't remember any of that. And
he pulls her over multiple times because her like brake light or tail light or something is out.
I've seen
this movie so many times. And this is a thing. I'm not just making this up. This is a storyline that exists in the movie.
I don't know, girl. Like, I remember a lot of that movie. I remember the plane scene. Me and my friend Johnny love the "Help me, I'm poor."
Yeah, "Help me, I'm poor."
In college, we used to say that to each other all the time.
Yeah,
it just like
"Help me, I'm poor."
It cracks me up, that line.
What is your name, Stove? What are you, an appliance?
Yeah,
it has a lot of good quotes.
I remember so much of that movie, but I don't think that there's a romance in it. I think you're wrong.
Okay. Well, I'm wrong. So we learned
something. No, you don't have to be wrong. You're okay. You don't have to be wrong. It's okay. It's fine. Anyway. I feel bad. Now I feel bad. Like, this is what happens. I feel so bad. I feel so guilty.
So go check that out if that's something you're interested in. Otherwise, just stick around here and we'll be back next week with some more Buffy. So until then, everyone, here endeth the lesson. Just ask. Shit 90 shows taught
me. This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.